It's time for Sounding Off with Phil Goff.
Here he is, the Mayor of Auckland, Phil Goff.
Did you ever
rock a bit in the Varna, Phil?
Yeah, I quite enjoyed that. Yeah, it sort of, you know, got the blood flowing a bit this time of the morning.
I mean, when you've got a full day of council admin to attend to, I guess that sort of thing, it's quite good for you, isn't it?
Yeah, it does look like that. The diary, I'm just looking at it now, stretches through till about 8 o'clock tonight. And yeah, not much.
All positive, upbeat stuff, is it? All choice stuff to be getting on with?
It's a reflection of the challenges we face as a city. That's all part and parcel of the job, I guess.
Haven't heard much about this mayoralty campaign. There was a big hoo-ha a couple of months ago about the Tamihere and the Fletcher attack, and then what's happened since then? Have they decided not to?
They're out there somewhere. I'm not sure. democracy's part of the process that we go through, and it's good that people have some choice. But in terms of making their choice, people are just, you know, they know the complexity of the problems that Auckland faces, and they need to have certainty that whoever they elect to that position is capable of dealing with that complexity and tackling the problems. The problems aren't going to go away. They're not going to disappear regardless of who is elected as mayor or onto council. And we just need to know. We would know overnight solutions, but we need to know that we've got a vision, we've got a direction we're going in, and we've got a plan to get there. And we've certainly got that. But as we'll find out later this week, it all costs money.
We talked about big trees last week. You went into bat for the big trees, didn't you? You spoke to government about that?
Yeah.
Since we last spoke?
I've sent a letter off to the Minister for the Environment, because one of the problems that we've got with tree protection, if you do it individually, tree by tree, it's a horrendously big job and hugely expensive.
You'd have to have some sort of tree assessor too, wouldn't you?
King of trees, sort of thing. You wouldn't believe the cost by the time you assess each tree according to particular criteria. What we need to do is have not go back to the old system where, you know, sometimes you needed a permit if you just wanted to trim a branch off a tree that was poking through the window. Don't want that. But I do want to have more widespread protection for significant and notable trees. And that means categorising trees. And, you know, if I was going to categorise a tree, I'd say something that was 400 years old was something that was significant and deserved protection. So that was all taken out by a change to the Resource Management Act, I think, way back in 2012, 2013, around there. And the new minister is interested in putting something more sensible in place, and we're working with him to do that so that we can provide more widespread protection, mainly for natives, but not just exclusively natives. There's some great old trees around the place, that are exotic, that you'd want to protect, that are part of the city's history and part of the greening of the city as well. So I'm looking to see a significant legislative change that would enable us to do that.
Right, so we can get any response back from the government, or?
Oh, look, I think in terms of the correspondence that I've had with the minister, I think that he's serious about it. It's something that I was looking at doing as a member's bill when I was in Parliament, but I got out of Parliament before I had the chance to do that. It really finds a better balance between the needs of development and the needs of conservation. And, you know, look, yes, of course, we're going to be building houses, and, of course, there'll be trees that need to come down from time to time. I suppose my thought about the Waitakere Ranges, if you wanted to build in a beautiful area which you're surrounded by native bush, why would you chop it down in order to build there? Seems a bit of a contradiction to me, but the landowner has that right, and the Environment Court has upheld that right, and there's not much we can do about that. And if I see, you know, about 18 months ago, they ring-barked the tree anyway, which was an act of irresponsibility and vandalism in itself.
Let's speak about land and the hikoi that came up to visit you this week. You were visited by hikoi discussing the Ehumatau development out by the airport there.
The Ehumatau area is a long-standing area of Maori settlement, one of the first areas settled by Maori about 800 years ago. And there's a village there. Most importantly, there's the big the Stonefields Reserve, which is a fantastic place. It's the Otuatawa Stonefields. There's 92 hectares of land that we're holding in reserve, and it has historical significance, it has cultural significance, and it has geological significance.
And I'm sure we've been out there for a school project.
It's a lovely area, not visited enough, quite frankly. I wish there were more people out there. And what I talked to the march about was our desire to lift the level of management of that reserve. It's a huge reserve, 92 hectares, and do what we can to ensure that we are highlighting the significance of that area. There's another small area of land that's got the historic Rennie homestead on. It's about 9 hectares. And we'll look at zoning that so it's public open space as well. What we can't do, and I was quite blunt with the protesters there, we don't have $40 million to buy the land that's currently owned by Fletcher's.
Fletcher Residential. How long have they owned that for?
They bought that off a family called the Wallace family, who had farmed it for about 160 years.
Right, so it's a long time ago. Yeah.
It's close to the village, but it doesn't have the same significance, for example, as the Stonefields Reserve.
Yeah, but it obviously has some significance. Because this is what the people that are there.
I mean, what I think they're worried about is that they're worried, you know, I think, God, I'm trying to remember how many houses are going in. There's quite a lot.
480, apparently.
Yeah, 480. That's the figure. They're worried that, you know, the village itself might be swamped by that. Fletchers have told me that they plan to have about a third of the houses in that area as Maori housing, and I welcome that. And Fletchers have made some significant concessions that they're going to pull back the boundary of the houses further away from the historically significant sites in that area.
So they've been 100% aware of the significance of the area the whole time, haven't they?
It's the land. If you look at it, and I looked at it, I went through there with the people from Seoul, probably 2.5 years ago now, maybe 3 years ago. When you look at it, it's a piece of pasture land. Its importance is its proximity to the village rather than the historic sites being on that piece of land itself. Now, you know, council originally went to the Environment Court to try to keep it as public open space, but we were resoundingly overruled by the Environment Court that ruled it for future urban development, and that's where it is. So the court has ruled that. The government has made it a special housing area. The last government did that. We can't change that designation, only the minister can. I wasn't going to promise things that I couldn't deliver to the protesters there. I'm not putting Fletcher to blame for this. I mean, they've kept within the law, and I think they've tried to make concessions, and they've indicated that they're happy to fund a whare nui, a cultural centre that will be on the Stonefields Reserve, so that we can highlight the significance of that. But it's one of these situations. Actually, the Maori community itself isn't at one on it too. The Akatai o Wahua iwi representative and the Te Kawarawa Maki representatives, and I think probably the Tainui, are probably in favour of the development going ahead. The Seoul, which is a group of younger people, some Maori, some Pākehā, are against it. So there's a divided opinion.
They're saying some of their members are saying they've got members of our whānau who are getting ready to just stand in front of bulldozers.
It's a motive, Phil. A hikoi standing in front of bulldozers, this is the real deal. It's emotional, but because it's emotional doesn't mean to say that I can suddenly find $40 million to buy a piece of land that we would not, in fact our rules say that we have endowed this area with a large area of public open space, and we cannot prioritise purchasing another piece of land over the needs of people in other parts of Auckland, and council has discussed this and agreed on it, we won't be buying the land. The government may wish to entertain that idea. I don't know that.
Regardless of the what's and wherefores of it, this is what comes as a result of lending bloody Eden Park all that money again, doesn't it? People see it and they go, oh, hang on a second.
Yeah,
and they're putting out another dolphin out in the thing, and they're building this for the Americans. Go, oh, what?
Yeah, well, you know, I'll stand by the decisions about the America's Cup. That'll be fantastic.
Yeah, yeah, we won't go into that as we do every week. but you can see why people roll their eyes when you say $40 million.
And look, you know, we'll probably have the tender prices coming through this week for the City Rail Link. After 3 years of 8% construction price inflation, it's done by competitive tender, but I'm expecting that price will go up and go up significantly. So our first obligation on council actually is to manage the finances of the council responsibly, and we'll be doing that. And that means that we're not going to have a whole lot of money to splash around. You know, every week I'll get... half a dozen requests for, you know, we'd like you to spend money on this and that and the other. And then equally, if you ask the people, so you want this sort of money for this project, you know where that's going to have to come from. That would have to come from the ratepayers or from borrowing. That's a different matter. We just want this amount. Well, we make a decision over the whole of Auckland. We manage our finances responsibly. We try to find the priorities that are really important to Aucklanders, and we'll keep doing that. But we're not a soft touch, and I've told councillors that. I told them that during the Mount Eden or the Eden Park debate. If you're going to advance money in a situation like this, make it a loan, make it recoverable from the sale of the asset, because one day that asset will in all probability be sold. And I think they sent the wrong message in voting just to make $10 million of that $63 million a grant. The rest of the money is covered by interest rates and is covered over the value of the assets. So that will come back to Auckland Council.
Right. Let's just go back to what you were saying about the underground rail link and the costs there, the construction costs. The government's announcement is that they have a construction sector accord to help increase the performance of the construction sector. What does that mean to the layman, and is it a good thing? And the fact that they've announced an accord is good, but what do you think the accord's going to be?
Well, it is a good thing.
Because we're in a city of construction. We've got more cranes than any major city in the United States of America.
98 cranes.
98 cranes! Yeah. Woohoo! Let's get a handy.
That's a sign of a city that is developing and is going ahead.
But just dumping cranes.
But, you know, the great irony with the construction boom is that we've seen significant firms lose money and we've seen significant firms go under. Ebert, for example, was one of the firms, and Arrow, both went under. Why did they go under in the middle of a construction boom? Why did Fletcher's lose all the money that
greed,
they did?
Greed.
It's about poor risk management, actually. Yeah. One of the things that they're looking at is how you get all the parties working together to manage that risk, because it's not good for anybody when a major construction firm goes under, the subcontractors don't get paid, people are hundreds of millions out of pocket. It's not new.
Dame Jenny Shipley in a court.
Yeah, main dealers. We both had the same thought at the same time there. There's that aspect of how you manage the risk, and there's a new sort of way of doing that where you have an alliance where you share the risk so that everybody, if there is a... if there are additional costs, everybody has to contribute towards that, including the owner, because, you know, you can't foresee what the risk might be, and the more complex the task, the harder it is to foresee it. There's a need to, you know, we've got thousands of kids that are not in education, employment or training, and yet we've got a skill shortage. So how can we start to upskill people so that we can give them the skills they need so that the work can get done and they can make a decent living for
their family. So on paper it's a good thing, isn't it?
On paper it's a good thing.
And it's going to be good for Auckland, I think, because we're the city of construction.
Absolutely.
And we're a city on the grow.
And it's good that the private sector, led by a guy called Peter Reedy, who's got a key role in Fletcher's, and the government, from our point of view, what we talked about in the Mayoral Housing Task Force is being carried into effect. So, yeah, I think overall it's a good thing, but delivery is more important than promise. But it's good that we've got the promise, and it's good that we've got the intention and the motivation to do it.
Phil Goff, thank you very much. Speak to you again this time next week.
Thanks,
Mikey. Have a great Easter. Bye-bye.
Bye, mate.
That was Sounding Off with Phil Goff.
Because